Thank you, Commissioners. Here on behalf of Gertrude Settlement and Larchmont Development Limited, in relation to rezoning of some land there at this point, which I'm assuming that the Commission will see at some point in there.
Yes.
I've always been an optimist, and I'd like to optimistically think this is hopefully one of the easier rezonings you may have in front of you to deal with. We are dealing with land at Arthur's Point, an existing low-density residential development, or residential zone, relatively close to Queenstown. We have no geological issues, one traffic issue with the exception. We have no infrastructural issues. We have an existing zone within somewhat of a logical boundary, more than somewhat logical boundary, with development already spreading beyond the zone boundary into the rural land, very adjacent to Queenstown. Arthur's Point's a very popular, for out-of-town commissioners, a very popular local residential area for people who live and work in the basin. And our overall submission is that this is a logical, sensible extension to the existing Arthur's Point LDR zone, which meets all the relevant tests, achieves all the relevant criteria that the council has put up for consideration, and that yes, commissioners are required to take into account in determining whether the rezoning is appropriate or not, part of it or all of it. I'm just going to speak to some plans. I have one small legal issue to address in relation to landscapes, which I've handed up, which I'll come to in a minute. I'm just going to speak to plans which you have circulated to you. I'll have to take a copy, but I'll flash you to refer to it. But in front of you that has been handed around are plans A to D, which were attached to our legal submissions, which I admitted to say I was a period of hell. It was done most of the work, and we'll answer most of the questions. So we're a joint team, and we'll pick and choose who answers your current questions. And again, just to ensure we have the background and the benefit of particularly out of Commissioners Crawford and Knapford, Commissioner Eugene will be very familiar with this site, having dealt with some various resource consent applications in relation to this land. But looking at my plan A, we have the proposed rezoning extension marked by the blue boundary. We have the existing LDR zone marked by the purple boundary. On the right hand side, you'll see lot 2 DP398656, which is the Larchmont property. Murphy, who have now appeared. We have lot 1 DP307630. You'll see in the centre, and then running off to the left, lot 2 DP307630. Those two lots are owned by Gertrude's Savory Limited. The two parties have combined forces to share costs and provide a quarterback presentation to you. You will see from that plan that lot 1 DP307630 is partially rural, the large part, and then the bit north of the purple line is existing low-density residential zoning. There's a funny little part section one there, which is also owned by Gertrude's Savory Limited, which I believe to be a now closed road. Looking at part section one, that little area of LDR zoning, just above it is a small subdivision accessed by a cul-de-sac, which actually comes off, even though it doesn't show it, there's a right-of-way It comes off Matthias Terrace. The corner of Matthias Terrace is a right-of-way across that lot there into that cul-de-sac. And that's the subdivision you may recollect consenting permission in Egypt some years back.
First of the two. The first of the two.
The first of the two, yes. I'm going to come back to that subdivision a bit later on. We have the contours there, which are really illustrative in terms of our case. The proposed access is, if you go up to the left, lot 2, DP307630, you'll see a road coming down from the top of the page. That's Atlee Road. A little piece of Atlee Road comes down and stops at the boundary of lot 2, DP307630. And when you I mentioned you drove into the site, you'll have driven along Atlee Road and then along the right of way, which comes down through that narrow stretch out into the flatter part of the site subject to rezoning. You'll also see by what we call the pinch point, the notation proposed boundary adjustment, which I'm going to address in a bit more detail, and that is land acquired to widen the pinch point out to a width of 9.5 metres. In terms of the blue rezoning boundary, you will see it coincides with a green line. The green line is the upper edge of the Shotover River Gorge Outstanding Natural Feature, as agreed between Dr. Reed and Mr. Espy. Looking on the left-hand side of the page, you will recollect Mr. Espy's evidence that he considered whether or not the top of the ONF should be along the black dotted line, which is actually the top of the very steep part of the gorge. But you can see from the contour lines on that left-hand side there, you'll see the river. You'll see the very, very steep contours, the orange, the agglomerated orange lines, which are the sides of the steep part of the gorge. And then above the black dotted line on the right-hand side and similarly on the left-hand side, the slope lessens a bit, but is still fairly steep, rising up to where the slope lessens again. And Mr. Espy concluded, having thought about it, that in his view, the Shotover River Gorge wasn't just the narrow steep-sided gorge bit itself, but extended up the steeply sloping sides to the green-yellow line. And that was now evidence in chief, and Dr. Reed agreed with that. So we have no debate about the extent of the ONF. One little thing in terms of the rezoning boundary, you'll see that in a couple of places the blue line extends into the cadastral title owned by the submitter. And we had an internal debate preparing this plan as to whether to have it as you see it there, with the rural general zone extending into the cadastral boundary, or to run our proposed residential zone along the cadastral boundary and put a BRA building restriction area on those two sensitive bits. Kerry Vivian and I favoured the BRA approach, and Mr. Espy was a bit concerned about whether that fit with the objectives and policies of ONFs, and we kind of went one way and the other. We ended up presenting this, but quite frankly, from our point of view or from the applicant's point of view, if the zone boundary were aligned with the cadastral boundary and those little bit of inclusions were marked BRA building restriction area, the outcome would be the same. We had no difference either way. I'm aware this came up in discussion yesterday or the day before in relation to another issue. Got reported back to us, was a talk about whether.
Yes, it's a problem that the definition of site means that of the zone boundary, you automatically can create a separate site.
Yes.
And that potentially creates a rural site that someone could seek a building platform on, which has the opposite effect of what you're trying to achieve.
I can assure you, Commissioner, that in this case, anybody trying to seek a building platform on two of those little bumps would have to build a house to make Billington look flat. anyway, a minor issue. We have no preference either way.
And I take it that's the same on the eastern side of the site where you've got those slight variations.
Correct.
As well.
Correct. Very happy to have the cadastral boundary run out to the zone boundary and cadastral boundary align with each other and have building restriction areas. Because, I mean, even from the blue line around that area, we have kind of setback under the rules anyway. Now, before going away from that plan, I want to touch on in terms of issues under debate between my expert witnesses, our expert witnesses, and the council's expert witnesses, as I said, ecology, infrastructure, geotech, all in agreement. There are some traffic issues, and there's an ONL boundary issue, and Dr. Reed's opinion is the ONL boundary. I'd like to address that briefly. And then I turned the other attachment handed out, which was my other clients at 10 ups. Giving it up on the early so we started.
As you
know.
No problem.
That's good.
I thought about how deep we could go into landscape in ONL, and given the number of cases around here, one could go on at length. But I thought it would be pertinent and possibly helpful to, out of town, to just touch on some aspects of the seminal C180/99, which was the major decision which forms the foundation of our landscape categories in our operative plan. And there's a couple of points here I thought were worth drawing to your attention and putting points on the debate next week and possibly the week after. Just turning over to the bits that I've highlighted, the third page of my attachment, page 48, meaning of outstanding, being conspicuous, eminent, especially in excellence, and remarkable. In the comment from Munro that a landscape may be magnificent without being outstanding. New Zealand is full of beautiful and picturesque landscapes, which are not necessarily outstanding natural landscapes. It's a particularly pertinent comment in this district. When people come here and think that everything's outstanding, just about.
96.7%
of it is. Well, there's a bit of debate about 1% of it, just around the edges. And then there was the subsidiary issue as whether an outstanding natural landscape has to be assessed on a district, regional, or national basis. And that's the same as Mr. Goldsmith. I'll screw around then. The court was kind enough to accept my submissions at that time that outstanding is in relation to the district. I've quoted Mark there, paragraph 85, where the court agreed with my submissions that what is outstanding can only be assessed in relation to the district plan on a district-wide basis, because the sum of the district's landscapes are the only immediate comparison that the territorial authority has. And then over the page in 86, the local approach is consistent with identification of particular places, the unique landscapes of the given district. And then a much-quoted comment on the following page, 57, usually an outstanding natural landscape should be so obvious in general terms that there is no need for expert analysis. The question was appropriate development is another issue, and one which might require an expert's opinion. Just because an area is or contains an outstanding natural landscape does not mean that development is automatically inappropriate. And the first sentence of that quote actually came from this hearing, which was held at the Millennium Hotel, when His Honour put the question to Mr. Marquet for the council as to what is outstanding. Mr. Marquet turned and said, "That is outstanding. And it's obviously outstanding."
Remarkable.
And the point of all of that is just to say to you, submit to you, that when you are dealing with the boundaries of an outstanding natural landscape, just remember that the bar, generally speaking, is quite high. We are talking about outstanding natural landscapes in this district by comparison with this district or what's in this district. And that's a consideration of my submission that you should bear in mind when you're thinking about, and there's a few areas where there's no debate. In some of these hearings, there are a few areas where there's a debate. And those considerations are ones that you might bear in mind when considering whether a particular area of it's not obviously outstanding, but has some outstanding characteristics, whether it actually should be in the ONL, or whether it should more appropriately fall into the balance rule. And as you'll see from my legal submissions, I thought about embarking on a discussion about the size of the landscape, but I think looking at the structure of the new plan, your obligation is to identify the ONLs and the ONFs, and then everything else which is rural landscape. So it's everything left over after you identify the ONLs, identify the ONFs, everything else that's rural, however big it is, wherever it is the third category. It's become the leftover category. I think it's quite clear from the way the district plan is structured. And you may even, I think it's a fair submission to make that where there is a debate between two senior expert landscape experts, as you have with this one, Dr. Reed, senior experience, been around a long time, Mr. Espin, senior experience, been around a long time, they have a difference of opinion. The mere fact that there is a difference of opinion might lead to a question mark in your mind as to whether the land in question is probably part of the ONL. I'm not saying just because it's a question automatically isn't. I'm just saying the fact that two well-experienced and gazetted experts can disagree might be a pointer as to whether it should or shouldn't be part of the ONL. So then go back to my plan A. I make the point that the area of land that is under dispute as to whether it is or isn't part of the ONL, which is, if we just flip over to plan D for the minute, I think we're talking about, and I was, couldn't quite follow Dr. Reed's analysis, but I think we're talking about the area between the pink dotted line and the blue line. I don't think the green line. Is that part of an ONL? And when I go back to plan A, I just make the point that if it's part of an ONL, none of the rest of the ONL that it's part of is on that plan. We have residential to the north, we have residential to the west, then we have the ONF, Shuttered River, which divides those two areas of residential and kind of wraps around the bottom and goes off to the right. And although it isn't marked, it probably includes the little bit down in the bottom right-hand corner as part of the ONF. So if this little area is part of an ONL, it's part of an ONL that none of the rest of the ONL appears on this page. It's just an isolated little area of rural land between residential development and a magnificent gorge. And your task is to decide whether, in fact, the area under dispute is properly and logically part of the unchallenged ONL, which completely surrounds at this point. I don't think anybody's arguing that everything, much of the land off this page around this area is ONL. The question you have to ask yourself is, does this small kind of separated section fall into that ONL, or does it fall into the balanced rural landscape classification? I'm not going to answer that question. I think it's a question for you to determine on the facts that are before you. I thought it interesting on this point, if I can turn to plan B, which is just the same plan overlaid over the an aerial photograph. It's actually interesting to note, if you follow the green line around and look at the vegetation below the green line and above the green line, it's actually quite different. There's a different pattern, which isn't surprising, because below the green line there are mature trees on slopes that they tend to be further apart. They tend to be bigger and bushier, and there tend to be fewer of them. So there's kind of a different landscape pattern along the slopes of that of the gorge below the green line. Above the green line, where you get into the flatter, more fertile areas, the wild and timber grow much closer together. They're densely packed. They come to little points. I'm sure if you were walking on site, you'll have walked through a forest that didn't have any site branches, the big bare poles going up until the canopy, and they're all pointing little tops out through the canopy. There's actually a vegetative difference below the green line and above the green line. which relates to slope topography. I imagine we haven't tested it. Fertility and other considerations. Also, turning to page C, as submitted in our legal submissions, it's interesting to see what was happening in the 1960s. And you can see the very vivid, the green boundary running around on the plateau. It's interesting to see that back then the pastoral farming activity went right to the edge. So we are talking about land that, at least in part, was pastoral. Obviously not so steep that the farmer couldn't clear whatever other vegetation was there before and plant pastoral grass. And potentially that historical factor may assist you in determining whether in fact the land under dispute is part of the wider Owenella lot. Certainly back then it was land which might fall into the operative district plan definition of visual amenity landscape, then pastures on terraces, just on hills.
Mr. Goldsmith, before you leave that, I think in your legal submissions you talked about what might be the source of the wilding pines. Is that duck spot there?
Yes.
Good.
That information came from Mr. Murphy, he's been around long enough to know.
Thank you. Now that's helpful.
They were removed just before I bought the land.
They were removed.
That was a plantation. And all the rest have self-seeded from that.
Thank you.
That's the dark greens. So the larches probably came from somewhere else.
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Absolutely, please.
Are you suggesting that pastoral farming land should never be in an ONL or cannot be an ONL? Is there authority for that anywhere?
I'm certainly not suggesting that at all. There's extensive pastoral lands in the ONL. I'm just submitting.
What's different about this particular patch?
It comes back to the operative plan. You shouldn't get the operative plan description of visual amenity landscapes. Haven't found for me. I'm submitting that photograph helps show us the underlying topography and nature of the land without the wilding pines at the moment screen. The moment you look at that hillside and there's big tall wilding pines that obscure the underlying topography. This historical photograph shows you the underlying topography and I think helps you judge whether this little piece we're talking about is part of the wider ONL around, which certainly includes more steep pastoral landscapes, or whether it more naturally falls into a part of the lesser category of landscape. This is just, I'm reading from the operative plan, which actually comes from CF 108/99. The visual amenity landscapes are the landscapes which particular regard is to be had under Section 7 of the Act. They are landscapes which wear a cloak of human activity much more obviously, pastoral in the poetic and picturesque sense rather than functional, or Arcadian landscapes with more houses and trees, green introduced grasses, and tends to be on the district's downlands, flats and terraces. So it's a description that, had we been having this debate with the land like that, there may have been different factors being brought into play as to whether this little bit we're talking about was part of the ONL. But I'm certainly not submitting that pastoral land can't be part of the ONL because this vast expanse of the district. Anyway, with that, I'm going to leave the ONL debate to you and the witnesses and commissioners. Our next plan, D.
Mr. Goldsmith.
Yes?
Just one last thing about the ONL. We realise that the ONL applies over the whole of Arthur's Point.
Including the residential areas?
Yes.
There is no ONL boundary around Arthur's Point.
Which we think might be a mistake.
Yes.
Well, interesting enough, that's probably a carryover from the existing plan, because there's no ONL boundaries in the existing plan either.
Thank you for that.
I think that's just a rollover.
And we did ask Dr. Moody that day, and she said that she didn't consider the residential zones because it only applied in rural, but no one, when preparing the maps, obviously understood that distinction.
I'm reminded that and see that in one of the later decisions, I think it was C1A Herbert 99, around the Franklin Arc, the judges ran the line around the zone boundaries. Mm. All around the Franklin Arm, the ONL line follows the zone boundaries.
Mm.
It's just that the court never looked at Arthur's Point. And I'm sure had the court then looked at Arthur's Point, they'd have run a line around the zone boundaries like they did in the Franklin area.
Thank you for that background.
So Plan D was just separates out the... I thought it was interesting that if you compare Plan D with Plan B, what Dr. Reed is recommending is essentially her pink land on Plan D contains the houses on plan D. You can see the existing on lot 2 DP 398 656, the Larchmont property, there's an existing house on the right hand side and a partially completed house on the left hand side, and then in the central part of the Gertrude property there's two houses in the rural, and really it's just those areas which Dr. Reed has included in her extended LDR zone. And I acknowledge, to that degree, there is some logic to Dr. Reed's boundary, given that she's extended the LDR to include the areas where residential development has already spread, and it does go up and over the top and down the ridge, so it does exclude the southern half of the so-called Schisto's Norm. But again, I'll leave it to you to determine whether you think that her boundary has logic which overrides Mr. Espy's logic and the detail that has been traversed at the legal submissions, I won't repeat it. I'm then going to turn to Plan E, which Mr. Nugent will recollect. Plan E is, you'll see bottom left, it's approved plan under RM130588, which was attachment I, the last attachment to our legal submissions. We didn't attach the second, there were two decisions, which Commissioner Newton will remember well. The first decision created lot 1, lot 2, lot 4, roads to dedicate, and lot 3. That was a subdivision of the then Swan property. Swan sold to Gertrude Savile Limited. And in the second decision, issued at the same time, just above lot 3, you'll see lot 1 DP398656. The second decision consented the subdivision of that land into 9 residential lots. And those are the ones you can see on Plan A. The cul-de-sac with nine lots can be accessed off. Now it's kind of complicated, commissioners, because my client was Mrs. Murphy sitting behind me. I found themselves the owner of lot 1 DP looking at Plan E, DP398656. And shall we call it a concerned group of neighbours to the left, on either side of lot 4, and a concerned group of neighbours off Matthias Terrace. Larchmont ended up getting the consent you're looking at on Plan E, which created lot 4 as a road to dedicate. A consent to subdivide lot 1 DP398656 with access off that road, and another consent to subdivide lot 1 DP398656 with a consent to access off Matthias Terrace along the right of way that I mentioned earlier. And at the end of the day, for reasons which I don't need to bother you with, the consent was exercised. Lot 1 DP398656 is now subdivided, there are houses being built on it, and its access is off Matthias Terrace along the right of way. Now, of course, what's interesting is that that consent's been exercised, This consent, as I actually discovered this morning, is still valid. It was issued on the 4th of May 2014 and expires on the 4th of May next year. So this consent created Lot 4 with a pinch point, and it's 6 metres wide at its narrowest point. It was a road carriageway, I think, of 3.1 metres, to enable access into 9 residential lots on DP 398656, plus 3 existing houses, not actually, plus some of the other existing houses. It's quite complicated. But anyway, that consent is still there. So there has been, the council has granted consent for road access off Attlee Road through the pinch point into the existing LDR zone. Now, of course, looking at Plan E, Lot 1 DP 398656 is part of the LDR zone. I think you can see the zone boundaries at the bottom and the middle. Low density residential zone and rural general zone. And Lot 3 that you're looking at there is the area of land which Dr. Reed calculated could be developed into somewhere between 8 and 22 lots. And if you apply Mr. Glasner's formula, it's about 15 lots, which is right in the middle. So if you subdivided Lot 3 into average 450 square metre lots, a bit of roading, about 15 lots. Now, and then you turn over to Plan F, which is a plan taken from the boundary adjustment consent issued about a week ago. And next to the legal solutions, I think Mr. Kerry also annexes it, whereby Gertrude Saturn Limited has purchased the green land off the adjoining Lot 2 there. Binding agreement for sale and purchase. The heads of the agreement, by the way, that I attached to my submissions has been overtaken by agreement for sale and purchase, which I couldn't find. And boundary adjustment has just been issued, and that's now going to trigger the land exchange, so that the so-called pinch point is going to widen, and you can see it there, from the pre-existing 6 metre legal width, plus 3.5 metres to a 9.5 metre legal width. And that narrows down, so effectively the 9.5 metre legal width is the same at either end. So we have a stretch of land there which is about 80 metres long with a 9.5 metre legal width. The significance of that, of course, is that...
Did you say 80 metres?
Yeah, 80.
Yes. I've read 80 metres about 3 or 4 times in the evidence, so I'm assuming someone's measured it. I'll get this to Vivian to confirm that, but my understanding is it's like... I understand the 80 metre to be from end to end of the green.
I'm just looking at the plan and the boundary length listed, the opposite boundary is 36 metres.
Oh, yeah, it looks to me. 37.3. Actually, we may be way short. I think we can assume that 37.3 is correct. I'll get this to Vivian to check that, but given the 36.82 on the far side, it looks about right. So it looks like the green bit is stuck down to 40 metres. And of course, either side of that green bit, the Gertrude's land widens out and can accommodate any width of road. That has some significance for you, potentially, commissioners, in relation to the concerns that Ms. Banks raised in her evidence about this internal access, responded to by Mr. Carr. I'm going to leave their responses and their evidence on their own, but the fact is that Gertrude Salary Limited is about to complete the acquisition of the Greenland. It would be in a position then, although we haven't discussed it, because I've only tweeted this morning that this consensus, the Plan E consensus is still alive, to apply for a variation to widen the road to be dedicated out to the, you know, to out to the 9.5 metre width, which, given that consent was issued, would probably pose little difficulty. But more importantly, the issue of how many houses that road should service, in my submission, is not one that needs concerning. Because, at the end of the day, the council has ultimate authority and control over whether to accept the road, particularly when it's got to be dedicated, as this one has to be dedicated because of existing interests. So, the council has power to decide whether to accept the legal vote at all, and therefore there will be a further, there will have to be a future subdivision application, or a variation, maybe a risk consent, and a debate about how many houses that road should be allowed to service. And whether that's 40, 60, 80, or under 120 is a matter that Gertrude Salary Limited will have to engage with council on. They'll have to persuade council. Let's assume the land is rezoned for the potential 89 houses, and Gertrude Salary Limited comes along to subdivide that land. We still have an access road which doesn't meet the council's code of subdivision standard in terms of legal width. It's meant to be 50, between 1 and 200 houses, it's meant to be 15 metres wide. Legal width. Carriage width isn't going to be an issue, but there'll be an issue on legal width. There'll be an issue if you're over 100 houses on footpaths on both sides, and there'll be an issue of a parking lane, I think. So there are two or three aspects where that road, even widened, is going to require a consent of some sort in a future subdivision. And the other thing, of course, is to realise that, let's assume none of this rezoning happened, Lot 3 is still low-density residential, and Lot 3 is going to be developed. Its only legal access is along through the pinch point. A consent has already been granted to service the original 9 lots, new lots, off the narrow pinch point, maybe 15 or 16 lots on lot 3 off the wider pinch point. The road's going to be built regardless. The land's going to be developed, the road's going to be built, it's the only way in, and it'll be built to a certain standard. The only question that will end up having to be determined by the council is how many houses will the council allow that road, which will be built anyway, to service, due to the other things that don't quite fit. So the road's going to be there, there's development going to happen. Mr. Carr's expert evidence responds to Kim Banks's concerns, and in my submission addresses them fully. But my backup submission is that even if you had any doubt about that, those are detailed subdivision issues which will be addressed at a later stage if the land is rezoned.
Is that a suitable time to break?
I was just about to say, I think that's the end of my legal submissions, Commissioner Stevens. I'll be happy to answer any questions, but I'm going to have a break and a cup of tea first.
Yes, we'll take a adjournment until